anybody listening to this can apply this to some instance of their life, whether it's in their product that they sell, whether it's in sales in general, whether it's in something that a hobby or something in their personal life, is that you're sitting here looking at these self-proclaimed, sales gurus with numbers, from the New York Times and Amazon that are like audacious and wow, like this person must be really smart. And meanwhile, when you talk to the people that are actually using their tools, reading their books, learning their ways, even the ones that say things like, yeah, I learned a ton from that book, it's so good, they're not doing anything the books say.
Welcome to the Rockstars Rocking Podcast, powered by Voluntary Disruption, a show dedicated to people who are crushing their business and life goals. These are bite-sized conversations with leading rock stars in their respective industry who are pumped to share their story to help drive you to the next level. So, are you ready to rock? Speaking of rock stars, here's your host, Eric Silverman.
Hey, rock stars, welcome back to another episode of Rockstars Rockin'. Boy, do I have a rock star with us today. Everybody meet my good friend, Dale Dupree, hailing out of the Orlando, Florida area. What's up, Dale?
What's going on, Eric?
I am living the dream, man. I'm so excited and pumped to have you on the show. For those that don't know Dale, and I don't know how you don't know Dale, the guy's just exploding over the last few years in the sales training and advice giving world. Dale is the leader of the sales rebellion. He defines himself as an epic sales trainer. We're going to have to dig into that, man. Keynote speaker, podcast host, just all around sales ninja extraordinaire, in my opinion. As I said to him right before we hit record, I've been stalking him on LinkedIn and social media quietly for quite a while. I'm one of those guys on LinkedIn, Dale. I don't always like or comment on your posts, but I'm watching. Let's talk about that for a second. Do you believe that there's a lot of guys or ladies in the industry of sales and marketing that are like me? They don't always comment, they don't always like, but they certainly absorb.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that come to fruition as well too, in regards to not just like thinking it, but actually having someone do something such as send me a direct message or hire us even and tell me that they've been watching me for 2 years and they never like or comment on our stuff. Now, the other side of that too is that a lot of people, they're kind of worried about putting their opinion out there or supporting a post that their company or organization that they work for might see. And I put a lot of stuff out that kind of goes against the status quo of the sales world. And so there's a real fear in some cases because of that. It's not made up. Matter of fact, I had somebody just about 3 weeks ago now hit me up and say, so I put a comment on your post like 6 months ago. And one of the people at my company saw it, turned it in, and they fired me.
Get out of here.
Real life. And I said the same thing. I was like, are you serious? And then I said, and you're going to blow up their spot, right? Like you're going to blow their spot up and talk about that, right? And he said, nah, I've already got another job and I wasn't happy anyway. So it's like, it actually kind of worked out. But he said, that was how they cited that as the reason for my termination. A comment that I made that disrespected their organization. He never mentions them in the comment, by the way. He just literally says that these are things that I think should be right based on my content. And apparently the people that were at his company read it and were like, well, that goes against everything we stand for. And you must be talking about us. It fires him. So,
holy shit. That's crazy, dude. I mean, it's sad, but true. I see that. And I've heard similar stories in other veins where, I have a buddy who is in sales. He's a high-end sales guy at an insurance company. And he transitioned to a W-2 executive position. And he was on LinkedIn. He was making comments, even on Facebook, his personal page. And he got called into HR and they said, you need to easy does it on your commenting and your posting or else. It's not cool, but it is what it is. Let's talk about that for a second. I mean, here's the deal. I believe that companies that do that, they're worried about somebody creating their own personal brand on the company's dime. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one of the issues for sure. I also think that companies try to put too much control over the messaging of their people in general. Because they say to themselves, oh, this isn't exactly as we want it to sound, and it's not our preference, and so shut your mouth. And I think that that's one of the biggest travesties in the business world, is that corporations and companies in general try to control the way that their people think, eat, sleep, talk, walk, live, and it's dumb.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree at all. And I've seen folks be in a tragic position because of it as well. So you let's dig deep a little bit just to give some people some perspective. So you're certainly you're not new to sales and prospecting and marketing and so forth. You started out in the family business in copier sales back a long time ago, I guess nearly 15 years at this point. Is that right?
Yes, correct. So it was 2007 when I first started in the copier game, and I was coming off of touring in a heavy metal band that I had been doing since I was 16 years old and,
wow.
and was signed to a record label at 17. So it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun growing up.
So let me get this straight. This is the Rockstars Rockin' podcast, and I actually have a true rock star on the show. Like, I talk about rock stars all the time, Dale, but I don't know of many that actually have a musical background. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So music kind of ran in my veins. My dad had musical aspirations as well too. And like kind of just as a hobby to an extent, but he was a really good guitar player. Always like, you know, pulled it out around the campfire and played some old Eagles jams or Pink Floyd.
There right? you go.
He was awesome with that kind of stuff. But, you know, his friends played instruments, you know, so it was, music was just kind of always around us, and it was my thing for sure. I liked the spotlight. I liked the idea of being able to be creative with my career. And so I was very attracted to it. And I went all in and made it my thing for a portion of my life.
Do you still play?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What's your instrument?
So guitar would be what I would play the best, but I've got a piano in the house. I had, you know, the ability to be able to learn the drums at a certain point in my life. And so my cousin was a drummer. So I'm not the best at that, but I'm good at rhythms and keeping a beat in general. I'm super creative, right? So the thought is that I use those kind of mediums to just allow myself to kind of let loose and unload a little bit of that stress at the same time too. So if you ever went to like Sam Ash or Mars Music when you were growing up at some point, or somebody that's listening to this now, and you heard the kid in the corner playing the drums super loud and just doing their thing, it was probably me if you were in Orlando.
That's awesome. There you go. See, I'm learning already. I did not know that. You probably have talked about it before and even on LinkedIn, but I didn't know that. So there you go. Let me ask you a question. You left the copier world in early 2019, roughly January, and you launched the Sales Rebellion in, I would say, I guess, February, March timeframe. I think March. But my question for you is, you know, you went into a crowded space, in my opinion, being in sales my whole career, 21 years, you went into what I call a crowdy, noisy space of sales trainers, marketers, keynote speakers, everything that you're doing. How did you differentiate and stand out from the pack of all the old school and even new school sales gurus, those with the books and the preaching of do this, not that?
You know, I get this question a lot, and I kind of have the same answer for it across the board, but I like to just dive into it a little bit deeper every time as well too. And one of the first things that comes to mind is just when I think about my sales career, I think about the influence that other people had on it. That's where I start. And when I think about that, I think about the things that had an influence on it were my passion for people, right? So the people that I was passionate about, especially whether that be my wife, but back then girlfriend, whether it be my father, who was also my mentor, whether it be a couple of friends I had in the community that were really good at sales, those were the people that truly influenced me. You know, other people that influenced me in the space were like my old skateboarding friends, you know, and like biking friends, like in their careers in extreme sports and like being sponsored and basically running businesses, right? Because I feel that everybody's in sales, that a teacher sells knowledge and a broker sells a network, for example. You know, I also believe that a buyer sells themselves. So when we look at the bigger picture of what sales truly is, for me, it was that when I started reading, you know, like the first chapter of a Brian Tracy book that I then put down and never picked back up, it wasn't because I didn't like Brian Tracy. He's a great dude. It was because I felt that there was an influence from those people coming into my life that wasn't really needed. Number one, Because as I looked at their ideas of like systems and processes, I thought, well, I already have this stuff. And it's more, way more natural than what a lot of these people are teaching and preaching. So, you know, so people like Stu Hynek were my actual silent mentors, you know, guys that, and girls that were in the industry that were very creative. They were seen as marketing people more than they were sales, because I believed also sales is marketing. Marketing is sales. It's a very, two very important departments inside of an organization that we put the label of department on way too much, or put into a box too tight or too small. And, you know, so for me, it was really kind of just looking at the status quo and looking at the self-proclaimed millionaires and the guys that have written a couple books that went viral because nobody knows how to teach their salespeople anything, right? Everybody's looking for these sales hacks and shortcuts and answers. And I think the thing that really, really, really got me thinking about doing this full time and getting into this industry more than anything else was, I can't tell you how many people, and this is true, anybody listening to this can apply this to some instance of their life, whether it's in their product that they sell, whether it's in sales in general, whether it's in something, a hobby or something in their personal life, is that you're sitting here looking at these self-proclaimed, you know, sales gurus with numbers, you know, from the New York Times and Amazon that are like audacious and wow, like this person must be really smart. And meanwhile, when you talk to the people that are actually using their tools, reading their books, learning their ways, even the ones that say things like, yeah, I learned a ton from that book, it's so good, they're not doing anything the books say. And furthermore, they always have this little thing of, yeah, you know, I love, what a great book. I didn't like this part, though. I don't really like that part, though. Or, you know, I read it once, I'll never read it again. I'll never read again, though. You know, so there was always this answer, this lackluster answer around these people. And then I thought about like cults, right? And this is, I'm going to get a little crazy here, but I started thinking about cults, and I started thinking about, man, like those people are bought in, you know, like those people, Scientology. I mean, like, come on now, guys, like those people are bought the heck in. And sometimes they're billionaires, and sometimes they're Joe Schmo making $27,000 a year trying to support three kids, a wife and an uncle that has to live with them. Right. And so I started to look at those models and say, why is it that people are so bought into these things? And I started to truly recognize that what we are doing as salespeople and as a society in general inside of the sales world is that we're trying to attract this elitist mindset. We're trying to attract people that like, hey, do you want to be famous? Do you want to be rich? Whereas these groups that are more like a cult or a religion are really just holding a hand out and saying, let us help you. And I really started to put that together and think, gosh, is there anything out there that's really kind of like, let us help you? Or is it come and get rich, come and learn my seven secrets. I, me. And that's all it is. Really, it is. You know, you look at someone's credentials and it's just them talking about themselves and no one else talking about them, right? Or you read a foreword of a book and then you find out, well, these are like their buddies, right? And then you start to even slowly realize the exclusivity of the circles, and that everybody's in it to help the other person make a bunch of money, and they're not in it for the community. They're not in it to serve. And that was the disconnect. And so I started a rebellion, and Andy Paul, who's a great man, great human being. I was on his podcast, like episode like 7,006 or whatever, cause he's got so many freaking episodes on that podcast. But he said, so what are you guys rebelling about? And I straight up was just like, all your friends, like, no offense, but you know, they like, we're not into what it is that they've got going on and what they're teaching. We believe that people need a new message. They need their own message to be heard, not somebody, some new guru with seven things that's going to make them rich and famous. They need to lead a rebellion for themselves.
So, It's interesting because I not only agree, I mean, ultimately there are certain books that I've read and I talk about, but it's usually just a couple, honestly. And the reality is I find that most sales books, even the old school ones, even the new ones, they're all just regurgitating the same shit that they read in other books, and they're putting their own quote unquote twist on it. And you know, it's R&D, rob and duplicate, and they're just doing it. out in the open. So I love what you say. I love the rebellion. Let me ask you, what about a sales guy or a sales lady out there, a rock star pro who is in a W-2 or even commission sales? It's fine. They're out there and they're kicking ass, but they too, just like you, want to move on from that industry. They would like to, maybe they want to be a sales guru. Maybe they want to start something else completely. But the key question I want to ask you is, what can they do now to start laying the groundwork? Because I can't imagine you didn't think about doing this while you were still selling copiers and kicking ass there. So how can they lay the groundwork to move on to something different?
Every single moment of your life inside of your walk culminates into the legacy that you're leaving. So if you, it doesn't matter what it is that you think you might want to do or not do, because you're right. I didn't sit around in my band going, I can't wait till I can sell copiers, till I can quit touring the world and go sell copiers, right? And then when I was selling copiers, I wasn't like, I can't wait to do this for the rest of my life, you know, or even thinking like, what other sales jobs could I go to? Like commercial painting, that sounds super sexy. Or, you know, like I wasn't sitting around thinking these things and manifesting anything specifically. What I was doing was I was creating and manifesting my own legacy through the destiny concept of, here is where I am now. I need to meet myself there and I need to build around this. I need to say, do I want to be a salesperson or do I want to be a successful person? I needed to sit back and say, do I want to be a salesperson or do I want to be a servant leader? I had to sit back and say, do I want to be a salesperson or do I actually want to be liked by my community? So I had to sit back and really like tango with the opportunities versus the right things to do as well, right? Like all the little instances of crossroads that you have in your walk of, hey, you could just kind of get away with this right here. Or, hey, you could just kind of white lie to the prospect and they're never even going to know anyway and get the deal. Hey, you could just like put a little bit more profit in the deal while they're not looking here by doing this. Or, hey, you could go back to them and, you know, on the T's and C's and just really like bring them to their knees now that they've made the commitment after 60 grueling days of RFP work, because they're not going to revert back to that. Like there's all these little things that we have opportunities to do in our sales walk that are extremely wrong, but they're looked at as not a big deal. We're in sales. We make money. That's what we do. Right now. I'm in sales. Like I'm a leader. I love people. I want to see a community flourish around me. I'm okay with being wrong. I'm okay with being weak in moments. I'm okay with being vulnerable, as long as it pushes and helps others to be successful. So if anybody out there is listening right now thinking, what do I want to do next? Or who do I want to be when I grow up? And that can go for the person that's 55 years old to the person that's 15, right? All those questions apply. And the thought is this, is that like, you've already got it in you. You've got it in you. And every day you're fulfilling what it is that you want to do. You just need to remember to stay true to that destination that you're heading toward. What is the destination? Stop looking at the destination as like 55, retired, 60, retired, living on an island, you know, paid off my house. Like some of those things are cool, but what do they really do for you, right? What are they really growing, you know, in you and also around you? What kind of seeds are you planting? What are you nurturing? What are you seeing? You know, we tend to look so short-sighted. And we tend to have a scarcity mindset, whether we know it or not, in most things. And because of that, there is no abundance. Because of that, there is no fruit. And because of that, there is nothing outside of ourselves. So no community, nothing to really live for outside of my preferences and what I'm trying to gain and control. So let go, take some risks, have some fun. Don't sit around trying to calculate so much about what you're going to do. If you've got a great idea, don't sit and stew on it either. Go tell somebody about it. Let them beat it up. Let them criticize it and be open to those types of things, right? And then tell yourself the truth, right? Which is that you're all scared. Everybody listening, just like I was, you're all scared to stop, you know, getting a paycheck from somebody else. You're all scared. Don't be afraid of those things. I've been doing it for 2 years now, right? And yeah, like it gets a little frustrating and sometimes it gets a little silly and sometimes it gets a little stressful. I literally have never felt more free in my life though. Because I could, all the things I just said, like the negatives, I've had all those feelings working for someone else, right? This is nothing new. I'm just in control now. And I have to sit back and recognize that on a daily basis. But I'm not just I'm the only one in control. It's the community that I'm building and the people that I'm nurturing to become better sellers that really control my outcomes at the end of, and my future at the end of the day. And if I'm allowing that to be part of my reality instead of just sitting back and saying, no, Dale, you need to work harder and you need to do more, you know, then I'm really truly creating the fruition that I'm looking for from the perspective of what legacy I'm leaving. And I believe it all comes back to legacy. You'll probably hear me answer with legacy like 20 more times today, right? But that's the point.
I appreciate the insight. So I suspect you're like me, you're a big believer in iron sharpens iron. You surround yourself with the right people and you become them and they become you and vice versa. Let me ask you a question. You talked about the destination. Folks are always focused on the destination. And, you know, I'm more of a focus on the journey. I find that the journey is sometimes the best part. I mean, just even in a personal note, I got a wife and two kids, happily married, love my guy, my daughter and my son. And, you know, we drove 8 hours to the Carolinas this past year. And, sure, we had a blast at the beach, don't get me wrong, but the journey was fun. Like, you know, the sing-alongs and all the stuff I do with my little kids, and I'm sure you do too. Like, that's some of the stuff, the best stuff I'm always going to remember. The destination was great, but the journey was amazing.
I think that the journey is underrated, that we like glorify the macro way too much in life, that the micro is what we have to be more focused on. And that goes toward everything in our lives. Like, you got an anniversary coming up, you're like, oh, let me plan something nice. And then you go and then you make reservations for dinner and then you get some flowers and you do your dance, right? And meanwhile, there's so much more that can be dug into. There's so much more meaning in the term anniversary even. And furthermore, we think like, what are important dates in our lives? And we say things like the day I got married. Okay. And we say things like my birthday. And we say things like the day that my dad passed away. And those are important dates. Trust me when I say that, I mean that. I truly mean that. But at the same time, there's so much more that we're missing, right? Like all those customers and the day that they signed up for your services and started making you the wealth that you have today as well too, right? That's a very important date as well. And furthermore, like the appointment that you have coming up with them where they fired you and moved on and you're doing an exit interview with them, that's a very important date. And again, like we tend to just kind of go through the motions on those things instead of truly giving people the experiences that they deserve. And that's what it's about. Cause in the micro, if we think more about each moment, we think about the experiences that we're having. And so we'll think about things like you're sitting in the car trying to figure out what to do with the kids. You'll figure it out. If you're really thinking about the micro of like, how do I make them laugh? How do I make them remember this as well too? How do I make this worth their while? And so I would agree with you that we put too much emphasis on the macro. We really, really got to be focused on the moments. And the journey is the best part. I mean, truly it is. Like the macro is cool. And when you get to it, it's like, man, how epic. But like the journey lasted for 2 years. And that moment of that macro was like 8 hours, you know?
So let me flip that on its ass for a minute, because I agree with you. But I've had folks talk about from a sales perspective. I've had sales, quote unquote, gurus and trainers, folks that I didn't hire. But back in my insurance days, when I was with a carrier, they'd hire these, you know, $50,000 speakers or more who would come in and teach you how to sell. You know who I'm talking about, all those types of folks. And a lot of times they'd preach, when you're selling, you have to sell the destination, and the journey could be full of rumble sticks. It could be bumpy, and you got to get your prospect to understand the transition and the journey is not what they want to focus on, but they want to focus on the destination. So complete opposite of what we just talked about. What do you think about it from a sales perspective when you're out talking to a prospect?
Yeah, I think the journey is the same. I think that we try to rush into the sale too fast. I think that our process is convoluted, and the way that gurus lay it out even is convoluted. And listen, like, I'm not talking smack about these people. Some people label me as one of these guys and girls, right? So, which I'm okay with, because the perception is what it is. And so people can label me that all they want. But the thought is this, is that just like you just stated, most of them that are out there, they're trying to sell a book, they're trying to sell a funnel, they're trying to sell their way into their own wealth, right? Like, I made my money. Like, I've had my life experiences. I've also had a gun in my mouth on the top of a bridge ready to kill myself. And that's real talk. I've also slipped my wrist before that, 10 years before that, and was saved by my mom in my bathroom. Like, I have a much bigger respect for what life is. Like, I believe that God has preordained a lot of the destinies that I experiencing. And I believe there's a lot more. I believe that my family will have a better life because of the things that I can provide for them. And so because of that, every moment is sacred, right? I cherish it. I cherish everything that happens in my life. Like, meanwhile, we're over here just worried about closing the $50,000 pipe that we have so that we can hit quota and move on to the next month. Well, that's a fleeting moment, right?
Sure.
That's not an actual moment, right?
Yeah.
That's something that you got to repeat over and over again, right? But in a way that's like empty, you know, to an extent as well too. So, you know, I really do think that just in general, we don't give prospects the type of experiences that they deserve, that we try to rush too quickly through a process in general. People, unless they literally are ready to go right now, they're pretty slow moving, right? Like this podcast is going to come out a lot later than right now, but I got some people I met with on Friday that said, hey, we got to make a decision before the end of this month, and we'll probably make it next week. Well, when someone indicates that, then you stay in touch. That means that Sunday you send them something, Tuesday you send them something, Wednesday you call them, Thursday you give them another call, Friday you close it all up and you move on. When someone indicates like, hey, let's do this, it's different, right? But we have that same kind of set of expectations to everywhere we go with everybody that we speak to. How can I instantly gratify my desires? That's how we think as salespeople, and it's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have a lot in common. I mean, the name of my actual company, what I do for a living, is insurance. It's called Voluntary Disruption, which I believe disruption is an overused word, and I still name my company that. And short of boring everybody and you about what I do for a living, the reality is I too am often looked at as that, for lack of a better term, me. I'm a lot of times called an asshole, somebody who calls out the industry that I'm in, somebody who is going against the grain. So I'm rebellious in my own right. And I'm doing so in a not so sexy industry by the name of insurance. So I assure you, I get that. and I'm a co-author of a book behind me, Breaking Through the Status Quo. And in fact, that's how I first saw you on video, at least, not just following you on LinkedIn, was you spoke at an industry conference that's really huge in the insurance world that I recommended for you to jump on. I was so grateful that you were there and we got a lot out of it. So let me ask you a question. When it comes to moving forward, you know, I feel like a guy like yourself should have a book, should have, you know, your own book talking about being rebellious and so forth. Is that in the future? Can you shed some light on anything coming up?
Yeah, I'll say that when I first started to have these thoughts of leaving and doing something on my own several years ago, which really they started to culminate in 2017, regardless of going back to work for a corporation, I still had it in my aching in my bones to do something on my own. I even went, I tried out a friend of mine, Harry Spate, works at a great company in South Florida. He hired me to come in and speak to his team and train one of his new guys, Kay Coop, one of the coolest sales reps I've ever met in my life. And so I even got a taste of those things. And in the process of kind of trying to figure things out and get my bearings together, I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start writing down all my thoughts around sales and around my system and around being a disruptor. Because at that point, the sales rebellion wasn't even a thought, to be quite frank with you. Like it was an idea, but the name itself and like what we're doing now, not even close. So I just started writing. I started writing. And then I recognized that what I had written was a something that could be repeated. And my business partner, Jeff Viegas, he wrote it with me. We sat in my dining room right outside of this office every freaking night on the weekends outside of our day jobs and just wrote all day, Saturdays and Sundays, just wrote. And it took us several months and it was super freeing and super fun. But this is back in 2018 and 2009 it was 18. We were done by 2019 with this book. Like this book's been done for quite some time. It's really just about putting the final touches on it, making sure that it's meaningful and impactful. But it was literally the first thing I did. But I also don't like one of my really good friends and mentors, David Massover. He said, listen, like just take your time. It's like the best advice I ever got, right? Just take your time. It's like you've got plenty of time to release the book. So just like make sure it's the right time to do that. Make sure that it fulfills the things that you're trying to fulfill in regards to teaching people, in regards to their learning, in regards to their growth. You know, do the book and yourself a service. and chill. And when he said that, it was just kind of like, all right, well, we'll just see how long we can hold on to this, quite frankly. We developed augmented reality for it. It's turned into a devotional. So it's a daily read, essentially. So every day is 30 total days. So for every day for a month, including the weekends, you read a page out of this book. And by the time you're done with this thing, you'll have an awakening unlike anything that you've ever experienced inside of your sales walk, because we dive deep, we dig deep, and we go far. And the thing about it is that what we have created is the guide of how to start a sales rebellion, which is going to be the title of the book. And what we've also done is we've created my old brand, which was the Copier Warrior. We've kind of killed and buried him in the process, and in a tomb in the midst of these mountains that you see here. And you're wandering around looking for that tomb, which holds all my secrets, which are not so secret anymore. And so we
built
like
a game.
Straight up, dude. That's how we roll, right? We've built an entire world out of what the Sales Rebellion is. It's not just a brand identity. It's a literal identity. It is something that we hope that people will look at and say, I feel this. I feel attracted to this. I feel like something bigger with this. So the book is here, and it is slowly being put onto the Amazon store and slowly being set up with a landing page and slowly going to release. And we, as of right now, we're the first sales book to have augmented reality in it. If somebody hears this before it comes out and like rushes to it, cool. But like, we actually also own the tech. So the software that we use that we've created for the augmented reality piece, we didn't buy it from somebody and white label it. We literally built it ourselves. So we own the tech. So we have a developer full-time and team internally at the Rebellion as well too. So we have the ability to be able to scale around building these types of things out. And that's what we want. We want people to look at our company as something that can creatively impact their sales walk and take them to the next level.
That's awesome. When's the proactive launch date that you're thinking of?
Probably summer at this point.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, folks will be hearing this sometime in April, maybe May at the latest. So stay tuned. It's going to be awesome. Should be released as you're listening or shortly thereafter. So one of the things that I've gotten a lot of value out of, I wanted to see if you would talk about for just a second, literally just a couple seconds, is I saw you did a LinkedIn post not long ago, just a few weeks ago. You probably do it more than that, but I saw you invited anybody and everyone to your Slack channel to get real-time connection with everybody. And I joined. I don't know if I'm a stalker, man. I haven't commented. I haven't done anything. I don't know if you even saw me on there, because that's fine. But I've gotten a lot of value out of it, and I'm starting to see some real connection. But I remember you saying that it was an internal thing that you said, F it, I'm just going to make it for everybody. What happened there?
Yeah. So we sat back and said, you know, one of the things that we just think in general that companies do incorrectly is that they try to keep all their secrets, and you know, they're very particular about who they let in. And that's, to me, that's a scarcity mindset. And we're not built on that, man. And so we don't care if you have all of our stuff. We don't care if you see things that only students or paying students are supposed to see. That's fine. Like, we're not giving anything away that's going to make the paying students think, why am I paying? By any, trust me, we're not stupid, right? So like, there's that side of it as well too. So, but you'll get a buttload of value inside of that Slack channel from the perspective of that you have a direct line. If you ask us a question like, hey, I've been thinking about this, you will get an answer from us. We're not going to sit there and stare at it and be like, should we tell them? Should we try to upsell them? We're just going to answer you, right? Because we understand the value of what it is that we do provide from a one-on-one coaching perspective and from a team coaching perspective, that, and with our conversion rate as well too, that we understand that the Slack channel is extremely important, because it doesn't just bring people in to see what it is that we're about and to get an inside look at us and ask us for advice. It also connects our rebels together, which is what we're all about, spotlighting our rebels and making sure that they not only feel the love, but like get the attention that they deserve as successful salespeople and business owners.
I love it. And, you know, I get that question all the time. I do a lot of public speaking. I get hired to train in my industry, not sales train. And people always ask me, Eric, you're giving away the secret sauce. They say you're literally write about it in articles and monthly trade publications in my industry, et cetera, et cetera. Why are you doing that? Aren't you worried about competition? And I'm agreeing with you in that it's the abundance mentality. It's not the scarcity. And but I believe it's about execution. You can give away the best secret in the world. Anybody could have told you years ago, hey, you should invent this service that uses your car to pick up people. It's going to compete with taxis, and anybody can do it, but it's not about the idea. It's about the execution. So I love what you said about the Slack channel. That's fantastic. Well, listen, as we wrap up, I got four quick, rapid fires, cliche to say, every podcast host says it, but mine's not going to be about what's your favorite food and what's your favorite concert. Mine's going to be sales and tactical. So I want to see if you can answer these questions really fast in just a sentence or two. So first up, if you're ready, you ready for the game, the challenge?
Let's go.
Is cold calling dead? Yes or no, and why?
No, and the thing is, though, is that it's evolved and it needs to continue to evolve into the idea that it is the first impression. And so it's extremely important that reps take a different stance on how they do cold calling. They need to radically educate. They need to gain attention. They need to share a narrative that the buyer understands as well, too. And then they need to create an outline and nuance the entire process.
Boom. I'm a new sales rep. We're an existing sales pro who's looking to grow. I hope they exist because not every existing sales pro is looking to grow. Handling objections. What would you give me as advice?
I think that objections are looked at extremely incorrectly in the sales world, that it, when someone says something that we label as an objection, they're really just speaking from preference and a lack of familiarity. And that lack of familiarity is the most important piece. That if we do not create familiarity proactively in the relationship, in the conversation, before we get to a place where somebody will hand us an objection, then we will fail. The other side is that so many salespeople, when they hear an objection, they say, here are the three lines that you should say for that, blah, blah, blah. It's all crap. What you need to do is connect on the objection immediately when they say it, instead of saying, oh, I get it, or I understand. You need to connect on it, and you need to say why. Just ask and see what they say, right? Because if not, you're being assumptive and you're leading yourself into a dead end.
I love that. That's true. It's very true. What are top performers motivated by? Prizes, attention, notoriety, prestige, or money? A little bit of both, anything? You tell me.
Well, I think there's two types of top performers. There's the type of top performer that is a lone wolf and really is motivated by those types of things that are very materialistic. And they've been cultured to feel that way as well, too, that this is what sales is and this is going to make you happy. But I guarantee you that most of them listening right now, even though there is some happiness, that there's also a ton of failure and defeat in the midst of that as well, too. And maybe they're not as happy as they think they are because they glorify the status. They glorify this number one rep role concept. I believe that real top performers care more about the culture. They care more about the community. They care more about the mindset of a servant leader than they do of the things that they have and the stuff that makes them look fancy. And I believe that when they tap into that, that fulfillment and happiness are in abundance and they're always present instead of being chased after year over year over year.
I like that too. What about this last one? LinkedIn presence, right? You have a large following, more than 50,000 people follow you on LinkedIn. I'm only about half of that, so I'm looking up to you, my friend. How do I create a presence on LinkedIn? I notice in your case, you do a ton of word posts where it's literally just words and words and words, and people read the hell out of it. Very few pictures and certainly some video. What's your take on developing a LinkedIn presence?
Really, honestly, whatever works for you. There are tons of little hacks, and like the algorithm loves like short posts right now because of the dwell time. So if your posts can be read without somebody clicking see more, then you'll actually get more unique views because of it. And because of that, the system itself will push you deeper into the algorithm. But is that tribe building or is that algorithm hacking? It's what I always ask people. And so people come to my page because I write stuff and it challenges them. And sometimes it makes them mad and sometimes it makes them happy. And because they get an emotional context though around like my brand and what it is that I've created, they come back. And when they don't come back, they're not part of my tribe and it's okay. So I would say And I do post a picture every now and then. I do post a video every now and then. But really, like, if you want to find those things, follow me on TikTok, follow me on Instagram. There's other platforms that I'm utilizing daily, just like I am on LinkedIn, where you can get content that's more up to speed with how it is that you would want to consume it, where LinkedIn gives me the opportunity to write 1,300 characters every morning. So that's what I do.
Boom. All right, man. Question 4.5, because I got to ask, because I like food. Your old copier site's still live, and it says that you've eaten 10,189 barbecue sandwiches. I'm sure that's dated and it's gone up. What's the fascination of barbecue sandwiches? You could have picked any food just to have some fun. Why that?
It was funny because the creative genius that was like my literal go-to mentor around marketing at the time, he said, "All I think about when I think of you is barbecue, and so do your customers." Because like one of the things I used to do is I'd cook a competition brisket, I'd smoke it for several
Oh,
hours, sometimes
man.
all night, right? And then I'd cut that bad boy up into little sandwiches. Then I would like home make the bread, and I'd make like little garlic
Holy.
bread and my own barbecue sauce, the whole nine yards. And I would take those around in little Tupperware containers and just thank people for their time, for the appointment that they took with me, for their business that they give me. And so it was just one of those things that kind of came to fruition because of it. But barbecue is the South, man. Like, so, and I know that people joke and say like Florida is not the South, but listen, we are a place where culture is
South.
rich in regards to Southern food. And so either you're eating soul food or you're eating barbecue around here. And those are two of my favorites.
All right, man. Well, listen, how can everybody reach you other than, sure, look you up on LinkedIn, Dale Dupree? What's your website? Everything's going to be in the show notes, but I'm sure there are people that want to go right now.
Yeah, you can head over to thesalesrebellion.com or just salesrebellion.com. We'll redirect you as well too. We got a lot of information on there around our programs and what it is that we do, but that's boring stuff. If you want to find me on social, Twitter at Sales Rebellion. If you're on YouTube, / Sales Rebellion. If you're on Instagram, type in at Sales Rebellion. If you're on TikTok, at Sales Rebellion. If you're on Facebook, / Sales Rebellion. Do you get it? Do you get the gist now? We even have a Spotify playlist, the Sales Rebellion Spotify playlist. LinkedIn is /IN/ Copier Warrior if you want to find me directly.
Yeah, you must have started that years ago. Copier War. You couldn't get the sales rebellion. I am seeing a theme there. Fantastic. And if they want to hop onto your Slack channel, how can they find that?
Slack channel is found through my content. So
Okay.
you could
That's how
look
I found
up,
it.
yeah, you could look up if you're in Slack, you could type in sales rebels. Okay, but a lot of people have a hard time finding it. So
All right.
if Slack takes you there, great. If not, just find my content and in the comment section, we hide, as we like to joke, a link into the Slack channel every now and then inside of content. So come consume, come hang out, come join the Slack channel for sure.
Dude, as a big Disney fan, my family, you're right there near Disney in Orlando. I would call that a hidden Dale or a hidden Mickey, as they call it at Disney. So that's your hidden
Nice,
Mickey. I love that.
bro. Nice.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on. I really do. I'm excited for everybody to hear this. I hope they enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a pleasure to meet you. And for those that don't know, I mean, I don't think you have a social media person answering your DMs because it seemed genuine as F when I just messaged Dale right on LinkedIn and said, "Hey man, here's my podcast. Would you come on?" So he's on, don't pitch him in the DM, guys, but if you want to chat, I suspect he's open to a chat. Is that right, my friend?
It's all me, baby, on any site.
All right, perfect. Well, for everybody behind the scenes at the Rockstars Rockin' podcast, because trust me, I just hit record and asked some questions. I got a whole back office that puts this together. I appreciate them so much. For them, I'm Eric Silverman. That's Dale Dupree, sales legend, leader of the sales rebellion. And if you have any questions, comments, et cetera, please drop them in the comments section below and connect with Dale if you're not already connected. His stuff is out there. It's total badass fire. Thanks, Dale, for coming on, man.
Cheers, Eric.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Rockstars Rocking Podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you consume podcasts. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a review. 5 stars would totally rock. Until next time, Rockstars, keep rocking.